Welcome to the latest in Partners for Progressive Israel's webinar series. I'm Karen Shapiro, Vice President of Partners for Progressive Israel. We're honored to have Gabby Lasky with us here today. Before I introduce Gabby, let me note that Partners for Progressive Israel is an American not-for-profit dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, which includes an end to Israel's occupation based on a two-state solution. Partners supports Israelis working to ensure social justice, civil rights, and equality for all of Israel's inhabitants. The organization cultivates Jewish-Arab partnerships and seeks to deepen Americans and internationals' understanding of Israel and Palestine's complexities, so they can better advocate for a progressive future for all of the inhabitants of the region. Partners is glad to be bringing this webinar to all of you for free. If you enjoy it and want to more program like this, please visit our website, progressiveisrael.org, and make a contribution. And just a quick note about our upcoming program, Partners for Progressive Israel is in the midst of our Digital Israeli-Palestine Symposium, which will go through mid-December. This coming Sunday, the focus will be on religion and human rights. In the first session, we will explore some of the ways in which religion has supported or failed to support human rights in Israel. In the second session, we will discuss the conduct of Israel toward both foreign workers and asylum seekers through the lens of religion. Check it out on our website for more information and to register. Regarding today's format of this webinar, after I introduce Gabby, I will begin by asking her several questions. In the meantime, feel free to write your questions in the Q&A. And as we move forward, I will ask as many as possible. I will not be moderating the chat, so please write your questions in the Q&A. Now, with great pleasure, I will introduce Gabby Lasky. Until yesterday, Gabby was a member of the Knesset on behalf of the Meretz Party. She served on the Knesset's Constitution, Law, and Justice Committee and its Committee on the Status of Women and Gender Equality. Prior to entering the Knesset, Gabby served on the Tel Aviv City Council for 5 years, representing Meretz. She chaired the city's Commission for the Advancement of the Status of Women and Gender Equality and was an advisor to the mayor on sustainability and urbanism. Gabby is a human rights activist and expert. For years, she has practiced as a human rights attorney, focusing on the defense of freedom of expression and protest, in addition to cases involving torture, false imprisonment, and police brutality within both Israel and the occupied territories. Gabby's law firm has represented high-profile defendants, including various human rights NGOs, as well as protesters against the occupation, against police violence, and for social justice. In the early 2000s, Gabby served as Secretary General of the Peace Now movement. In 2012, she was the recipient of the Association for Civil Rights in Israel's Emil Gunzwag Human Rights Award. Born in Mexico, and by the way, she just returned from Mexico, Gabby immigrated to Israel at the age of 15. Welcome, Gabby. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Very glad to be with you.
We are all deeply saddened that you and our other friends in the Meretz Party did not reach the minimum vote threshold and are now, as of yesterday, out of the Knesset altogether. What happened? Could you give us your perspective on why Meretz failed to get past the electoral threshold of 3.25%?
Well, we're all still very saddened, and actually we still can't believe that this was the decision of the people that went down and voted. A lot of things I can say why this happened, And we still don't have the real, you know, exact answers for that. But I don't want to like not relate to your question, and I will try to do it as honest as I can. And one of the, there are several things. First, we can look at it, you know, globally. We know that around the world, we have seen the world going more to the right than to the left, and Meretz being the left wing party of Israel. So in a sense, we're the ones that are being left out, because, you know, but I can say that there was also for several years, there has been through the Netanyahu's government and other partners of him, there has been a complete, how do you say, I would say like a movement of trying to bash the left and liberalism and all the values that we represent. And so people, in a sense, were not feeling comfortable to be part of that. Either say that that human rights organizations represent terrorists or giving back or are defending terrorism and things like that, or that that human rights is only a way to bash Israel and things like that, or that the parties that are trying to bring peace with our neighbors, with our Palestinian neighbors, are trying to destroy Israel and things like that. So in a sense, people just didn't want to identify with that, not because they don't identify with those values, but because the hatred towards the left is so hard. And we can see it in the streets during all the demonstrations. We see that violence towards leftists is real. And so people just felt in a better place, not voting for the left. But also there were other reasons, and some of them are very practical and technical. The reason that's why the prime minister still until now, Yair Lapid, tried to make a technical federation between the Labour Party and Meretz to run together in the elections in order not to waste any left votes. And actually Meretz openly said that although we think that Meretz needs to be represented in the Knesset individually, but we were open to the idea, and we were saying that that it was the right thing to do. And actually Merav Michaeli from the Labour Party completely denied this idea of running together, not as the same party, but in a technical unity in order to pass the threshold. I can say that more than 150,000 people still voted for Meretz, meaning that there is an electorate, but we were 3,000 and something, 3,700 and something votes away from the threshold, which means that many, many left voters votes that were casted for Meretz, for the left, for our values and ideology, were actually thrown away and are not represented in the Knesset, although it's a lot of voters. And I think that if we would have run as we thought that was best in this unity fraction of together with the Labour, then all of these votes would not have been casted away. I think that Prime Minister Lapid should have been tougher in this idea, being the leader of the center left, should have made it more clear to Michaeli that it's almost not a question of choice, but it's something that has to be done. And so he wasn't tough enough. Merav Michaeli denied that. And so we were left in that situation. But I think that we also have to look inside. We also have to look into the eyes of our voters and our supporters and say what was wrong. First, I think that our campaign was not a good campaign. We didn't talk about all the incredible things that Meretz did in this government, in that less government through the things that we did by our ministers in the health minister or in the minister of environment. So we had a lot of things that we did there. Our members of parliament, we were all casted number one in being in the Knesset, in being the best parliamentarians, using the passing legislation in the Knesset. So we were very good in the Knesset. You know that Meretz is also very good or has always been very good in the opposition. But even that we were not there for more than 20 years, we were very good as coalition members in the sense that we were very, very good parliamentarians. But we have to also to say that through being in this very complicated government, and all our voters in all the polls that we made were very interested that we don't topple the government, we did leave questions regarding occupation behind. This was like the reason that the raison d'etre of this government, that we're not going to end occupation and that we're not going to see annexation. But still, I think that Meretz wasn't able to bring all their values and ideology regarding the occupation into the government. Although there are a lot of things that we were able to do. We were able to topple many new illegal outposts, but you know, things that were not outside, but you know, every time all the settlers were still trying all the time to create new outposts. And because we were in the government, we received the information and we immediately worked for them to be dismantled. So this we did. We stopped the plans of E1, we stopped the possibility of creating a new settlement in Atarot, where the airport once was. So we were working very strong regarding occupation, but I think that this government was very right-wing regarding the fact that that there was no that the settlers or the violent settlers had really impunity, although the Minister of Defense and the Minister of Police were in the hands of center-left ministers in that hand. So I think that things regarding occupation, regarding our ideology in occupation was one of the reasons some of our voters actually voted or didn't go out to vote and others voted for the Arab Unity Party. So that's also something that happened and we have to look it straight in the eye. Whether we were right or not, that's another question, but I'm planting what are the things that happened. Another thing is that in our campaign, I was saying we didn't diversify why was Meretz so important in whether in government or in the opposition. That our campaign was more related to whether it be Meretz or Ben-Gvir, but you know, also the Yesh Atid party, the prime minister's party, could say the same thing, same as Labour Party, but we should have pointed out with a much more openness and greatness, what is the difference between us and them? Because now I can tell you sadly that if Netanyahu makes this right-wing party a government, then there is no real opposition. There's no one in the opposition that can say the words occupation freely and easily. That said, that not only says that we need to arrive to a peaceful end of conflict with the Palestinians, but none of them really work regarding human rights issues in the West Bank. We don't see them in the demonstrations. We don't see them in the ground, as you can see some of the members of Meretz in the ground with the activists. And we are talking about the occupation, and this is not there. This is not represented in the Knesset anymore. And this is going to be a voice that is that is not going to be heard directly by members of Knesset. We are seeing what we're going to do, but that is not there. And another issue, I think, is that I have to say that every time that Meretz has been in the government, next elections, they lose electorate. This is for a fact. Why? It's maybe because our electorate is very, very ideologist, very ideological. And so in the one hand, the member of parliament and the party in itself makes compromises in order to be in the government. But on the other hand, our voters, although they know how important it is to be in government, they are much more difficult in saying, okay, this compromise is necessary. And so we had this balance that we have to make every time that we're in government, but we never thought that we're not going to pass a threshold. And this is not only saddening for us. I even heard members of the right wing now in the Knesset saying that that Meretz is needed in the government, because the voice of Meretz, the ideological voice, the very straightforward voice of Meretz, needs to be in parliament, even for them, for the right wing, to make these balances that they need, that sometimes they go too far, even without them wanting to, because there's no one in the other side that is calling for that, that's telling them. And also because the voice of human or civil rights in Israel is a voice important to all the citizens, not only to left wing, regarding things that I did regarding freedom of demonstration. It's not only the lefties that demonstrate, but there's no strong voice defending the rights of demonstrators in the parliament. So those voices are needed for the best of Israel. So it's very hard, of course, for me. Individually, I just started. I was a year and a half a member of parliament, and you know, you have a transitional period that you have to learn, because it's something else. So you have to learn how to be the best of yourself as a parliamentarian. And so many things we were working on them that we couldn't finalize. So it's very sad, but I think it's very tragic for Meretz and for the Israeli society that we got to this point.
We would totally agree with you, Gabby. We're so hard to, we love the, you know, a just democratic Israel. And it's hard to imagine Meretz, as you said, considered the conscience of Israel to no longer be represented in the Knesset. And it's been there for 30, it's a 30-year-old party that has served as the core of the Israel left. What do you see as the future for Meretz?
Well, first of all, I have to say that although we are, you know, these elections made us, you know, were very tragic for not only for our voters, but for the left. I think that although we're in this very low point, we have to rise our heads and know that our ideology is still important, and even in this more so in these difficult times. I have to say that when I try to understand Israeli society, I have to say, and we have to look into the eyes of our voters and ourselves and say, there is a war of values in Israel. And it's the fact that we are a Jewish and democratic state. The other side, or the right wing, knows that Israel is a Jewish and democratic state, but they look at it in the Jewish values very different than we do. And we have to know that. They believe that liberalism is not Jewish. that taking into consideration the rights of the minorities in Israel, the fact that the occupation is bad for Israel, and all of those things, they are looking at it into the prism of very, very right wing, radical, very radical right wing neo-fascist way of looking to Judaism. And we have to know that here our values are at stake, and that this is a war of values between liberal Judaism and messianic Judaism in a sense, and that you being in the diaspora are also going to be targeted because your Jewish values are so different. You know, there we have been hearing now that they want to change the law of return, for example, that it will not go as far as the third generation or the grandchildren, for example. They want to topple that. They don't want to recognize the reform or conservative conversions. Not that in Israel you can convert that like that, but those conversions that if they were made outside of Israel in the United States, they would be accepted here. So they don't want to accept them anymore in a way. The fact that Israel is part of the democratic world doesn't mean to them, it's not important for some of these parts of the government. You have to understand that there will probably have some members of government that are not allowed in the United States because they have been charged with terror cases. So we have to understand that. And the other and the last thing is I saw a comment, the values also have to do regarding as I think that I was clear on that, but like Messianic Judaism looks also into the occupied territories as being part of the land of Israel, and justify occupation and apartheid because of Jewish values that they believe in. And this is exactly our Jewish values that tells us that we cannot occupy 2 million people, not only because of democratic reasons, but also because of our Jewish values. So it's going to be very hard, but we have to stand high with our heads high. We're not going to, we have to find what will be the right way to present ourselves to the next elections. We haven't had, I can tell you, our Zehava Galon is now sick. So we haven't had a front to front, a meeting, but next week we will have the General Assembly of Merits will meet, will start thinking of how are we going to continue, whether, the possibilities are open as Merits together with other parties, making a partnership, a Jewish-Arab partnership, new party. We still don't know. But what I can tell you is that you should be sure that we're not going to leave the stage for less progressive parties, we're not going to get down on the stage. We're going to, even when we're not there, we're trying to find ways how we can present our values, human rights values, civil rights, democratic values in the Knesset. We will see how is the best way to do it with our partners. We're still standing with you, although you're there and we are here and we're not in the Knesset, but we still share the same things that we shared 2 days ago. when we were members in the Knesset, and we'll give them a fight. We will not let them change the conscience of Israel. And we will do it together.
Well, we are here with you, and we look forward to hearing what comes from your meetings. But talking about that, there's lots of questions about Jews and Arabs working politically together, and whether there can be the potential for progressive Jews and Arabs to work together, whether it be in a Jewish Arab party, or is there anything, or working, would you join a boss, or is there any ways you see working together in a Jewish Arab party?
Well, first I have to say that actually Meretz in these elections was really the Jewish Arab party, in the sense that in our 10 first slots, we had four Israeli Arabs that were elected to the Meretz list, without, you know, without having to say to the people, you have to vote for an Arab or not. So this is this was a natural thing for Meretz. So I think in that sense, Meretz was really living up to the idea of a unity between Jews and Arabs in Israel. And we do believe that that is the right path that we have to go. And now, you know, it seems years ago, but it's only, you know, the elections were 2 weeks ago. So we have to go back to the society, to the Israeli society that has and takes into consideration the needs of both Jews and Arabs, because sometimes there are different needs, what's happening inside the Arab societies regarding violence, internal violence and things like that. And these are things that we have to topple together as a community. And I think that we have no choice but to make and to fight together as Jews and Arabs for the best of Israel and the needs of all of all the citizens in an equal manner. So I think that we are going on that direction. But we hope, I can't tell you exactly how we're going to do it, but that is of course our aim in order to go further.
Well, given that that it looks like we have a far right government, it's likely to consist of a coalition of Jewish supremacists, authoritarians, and religious fundamentalists. What can the progressive camp do now, even outside of the government, to support the human rights and civil rights in Israel?
Okay, first of all, we have to everything that we can to do through the Knesset, because you're right, it's Jewish supremacists and racism and xenophobia. All of these are going to be represented in this right-wing government. And of course, annexationists, you know, and messianic Judaism and fundamentalism are going to be there. So I think that first we have to start working. We have to strengthen the activists community, the NGO community. And I think that in this part, I think that you have a very important part to play, because Israel's interests are knitted to the US and to other international friends. And I think that your voice is going to be, it's going to be needed, that you rise it up inside, you know, towards the Israeli government. And again, the fact that we criticize Israel doesn't mean that we don't love Israel, but exactly the opposite. And it has to be, you know, we are going to hear voices, whether in, you know, complaining that all of us that are criticizing Israel, we're terror lovers, or we're anti-Israelis, or anti-Zionist, or whatever. But I think that we need to make a clear and loud voice regarding what Israel has to be. We have to create new coalitions inside of Israel and outside with our partners, and we have to be working very, very thoughtfully. I think that for a long time the right wing created all this centers for academic or semi-academic centers regarding, you know, regarding how do you say medineut, policies.
Yes.
Yeah, all these policy centers, and they were creating papers and drafts and giving it to the members of parliament and to the government offices. I think that we also have to work through there in order to show what are the consequences of the right-wing policies. So I think it's very important that we actually work on that. And we have to work inside the Knesset, and we will try to see how us that represented Meretz in the Knesset, we go back there and continue representing it, even not as members of parliament, but as citizens, concerned citizens from the left, that we bring the voice that is not going to be heard by the other members of parliament. So we have to be there, and we will need your support for us for doing that. We will talk later when we have a more specific plan of how we're going to do things. And of course, we want to share with you our new ideas when we have something more concrete and specific, so we can divide work. But I think it's not only in the shoulders of, you know, of 40 members of parliament that are in the opposition. It's in the shoulders of all of us to give a good fight to keep, you know, Israel a democratic country, a democratic space with equality, that we are very afraid that because of the needs of Netanyahu, they will completely disappear. So it's a true and imminent danger. We have to know that. And on the other hand, we have to be together. We have to be connected all the time, because it's the same fight that we're going to be fighting, and we have to prepare like they did. The right wing and the settlers have plans for, you know, they have long-term goals, and they base their methodology by looking into their long-term plans. I think that the left in Israel specifically, but we have not been planners enough. We are all the time just responding to things that happen from the right, and we have to plan ahead, and through that, what are long goals, long term goals, and plan how we're going to achieve them, and so that's important that we do also together.
Well, we look forward to you telling us how we can, once you have more details. We're here for you, and we definitely would be welcome whatever you say and others in the party say, how we can best serve and support the goals for all of us. I have to say, I was surprised, and I want you to know that in our last in our symposium last Sunday, we met with several people from the LGBTQ+ community. They were very concerned with what this new government will do in the judicial system in particular. In fact, they expressed their fear that they might be used as a distraction, that they had been told they won't be attacked as a community, but that they would, and so they would make nice with them. And in the background, at the same time, they would grab power with the override bill. And so they felt that, you know, it would look like, oh, they're being good to the LGBTQ+ community, but in the background, other things going on. So can be done to pressure, to preserve democracy within the Green Line? And what can we do to support that? First and you all, as, and also you as an attorney, what strengths do you have? And personally, what would do you plan to do or can do?
Look, I didn't talk about the specifically about the override legislation, but the override legislation really is almost an end to democracy in Israel, and to the idea of checks and balances and the idea of human rights and the rights of minorities, completely 100%. And we have to know why they want to pass this legislation. First of all, is in order to allow giving allocations to the very religious people without us going to turn this legislation out saying that it's unequal. Also regarding LGBT communities. And also we have to remember the law that Smotrich tried to pass in several Knessets ago regarding land grabbing in the West Bank, in the occupied territories, although even if it's Palestinian land, that they don't have to give it back. So those are some of the reasons they want that the Knesset will overrule the Supreme Court decisions. But also we have Netanyahu's trial. So some of the things that they want to erase, some of the articles that he has been indicted on, and that's true. So what can we do? First, information. Okay, we have to really inform the people what is the true meaning of the legislations that they want to pass, and not only how it affects democracy as a whole, because there's a lot of, I've noticed that many people, when you talk to them in abstract terms, don't really understand. But you have to talk how it will affect them, their communities, personally. So that's something that we have to do. So that is information. Secondly, we also have some of the things that when it happened, we will be prepared to go to court in order to topple them. Although we have seen already that the courts are not being as liberal as they were before. That was also part of, you know, of the long-term planning of the right wing appointing judges that were less liberal. So we have started to feel the consequences of that, but we will probably go to the Israeli courts in order to topple that kind of legislation that is against human rights or against democratic values. So we will do that. But again, the Jewish communities outside of Israel have to present their voice towards this government, and not to say that because this is a right-wing government, they don't have to hear us, because you're a majority outside, and Israel in many ways depends also in the fact that the other countries still are behind Israel. And regretfully, regarding everything that we believe in ending the occupation, this is going to be, I think, one of the hardest things. I think that one of the things that they want to do immediately is to try and legalize all the illegal settlements, which is, I think, it's one of the basic things that the very right wing wants in their coalition agreement. And I think that you have to go out to your governments and for them to tell Israel that this is unacceptable. So you will have to, again, be very active with your candidates and with your representatives, you know, saying that there are things that are going to be happening and they have to put a step regarding that. And in a sense, actually, we've been talking a lot about, you know, in this government, we were saying that it was important to talk with the representatives regarding that Israel needs funding for the armed shields. How do you say defense shields?
Yes.
Okay, so that was a very important thing. So in a sense, Israel still depends on the United States for its defense, but it has to be clear that Israel cannot do whatever they need to in the West Bank, in the occupied territories, and make it more even violent space for Palestinians and things like that. Well, and that the United States says nothing about it. So you will also have a task there, in that sense. And we will have to strengthen our NGOs, and probably there will be more legislation against them as there was in the past in the right-wing government. But we will have to use grassroots movements and NGOs and everything possible that we can in order to identify the consequences and try to stop them.
Thank you, Gabby. We have a lot of questions here. I have to say we have quite the international group with us, people from Germany and the UK, as well as the United States and Israel, I believe. So I'm going to start asking some of these questions you've already addressed, but there's one here that from actually someone who's here from Germany who asked, why is the word occupation in the mainstream Israeli society not heard and not accepted, but ignored?
First of all, it's a right preposition. It's not only that it's ignored. There is a big fight in trying to deny that there is occupation. It's not only a question of linguistics, but it's a question of ideology. Because we know that there is occupation, then there are consequences from ruling from international law that applied to occupation, of how you should treat the people in the occupied powers, and that occupation cannot be something that is permanent. So because the right wing and even the center believe that it has to be permanent, they don't even want to call it occupation. But it's more than that. They say that because the land of Israel, all the land of Israel, has been given by God to the Jews, then it's not an occupation, but it's near like what Putin is saying, you know? It is bringing back what it was already ours. So it's not an occupation. So that's why the importance of just even naming occupation by its true name in the Knesset was so important. And there's regretfully always no one almost left there that will do it, that will say it, unless that they're from the Arab parties.
But even labor and people who, everyday people who are not religious. I remember when I was in Israel, I was surprised how many people who were not ultra religious, they would say, what occupation? Why is it so avoided?
I think that in a sense, we didn't do our job right. If I tell you that in the Ministry of Education, the map, you know, the maps in the school books do not show the green line,
right.
You know, it's something not only religiously, ideologically, but that is the ideology of the right, you know, to make an annexation of all the occupied territories. So they don't want to talk about annexation. They want to talk about the old land of Israel and that the settlements are legal. And, you know, so they don't want to put any kind of label that will allow young children, you know, children or soldiers or whatever to start looking into what occupation means and start talking about in a way that, you know, it is illegal and Israel has to end occupation. So it I have to say that the right wing has done a very good job in erasing the term of occupation, the same way that they have erased the Green Line. And actually, many people do not know when they enter the West Bank or the occupied territories that they're not in Israel anymore. And that was one of the things that I was trying to do as a member of parliament, to bring back the Green Line again. But everyone, I think, even from the Labour Party to the extreme right, are not interested in talking about occupation. I will tell you a small anecdote. As a member of parliament, I turned to Merav Michaeli, that she was the Minister of Transportation, in order to write in the exact place in all the roads that are crossing Israel to the West Bank, to write a sign that says "Welcome to Israel" or "Goodbye, you know, you have just gotten out of the state of Israel," as you do in any other place where you leave a state and you go back. But she didn't answer to me. But in that way, you put in the red, in the Green Line, exactly where you know where you're going, when you're going in and when you're going out, because it's not there. You don't see it. So they are all the time trying to elude and erase the Green Line. And so in the same way, they are trying to erase the fact that there is an occupation.
Well, we need you to continue to remind people, and we will as well. There's a question here that comes up often in the United States. How is it possible for Israel to be a democracy and a Jewish state? And the whole idea, I know it's different in Israel, that Zionism is a question here in the United States also. How can you be a Zionist and also be a democracy, and how did the two, you know, there's a lot of confusion around that in the United States. So can you speak about democracy and a Jewish state for a moment, and how the two?
Yes, I can do that. You know, it's a question for a symposium, you know,
right?
But of course, I have, I think that the truth is, I would like to propose what is written in the merits, merits mission. It says that Israel is the state of the Jewish people and of all of its citizens. In that sense, it takes from constitutions, from a lot of places where they say that, you know, that Bosnia is the land of the people from Bosnia and all the minorities in there and things like that. What the fact is that Israel has to one of them is that Israel is or wants to be a democracy, a Western democracy with all the democratic values and not only formalistic values of a democracy, but well-rooted. And the state of Israel is a state of the Jewish people, but at the same time, it's the state of all the other citizens. So, in that sense, when you talk about it like this, there is no problem between Israel being a democracy and a Jewish state, like the United States is the state, is a democracy and it's the state of the Americans. And also, you know, I'm Mexican and there's so many Mexicans there and they don't have the same rights as the Americans living there. And also we have to remember that, you know, the state of Israel was created as a consequence of the Shoah. And it was really the place where the people nirdafim, that they were nirdafim, how do you say that? That they were
I'm not sure.
Nirdafim. after the Holocaust, you know, the state of Israel was created as a safeguard of the state of the Jewish people. Thank you, persecuted. You know, it was the people of Israel were persecuted, and they created the state. But that at the same time should take into consideration all the other people that are living here with equal rights, as a notion, as we believe that the Palestinians must have their own independent state, democratic independent state for the Palestinian people. It is somehow strange because Judaism is many things. So in one sense, Judaism is also a religion, but it's also a people, and right. I don't think that there is a question that peoples have the right for their own independent state. The question is, what do we do with that? And in this new government, we're hearing a lot of, you know, of of not white supremacy, but of Jewish supremacy, in the sense
right.
that when we have, if the state is a Jewish state, then we can infringe the rights of non-Jews or give them less rights. And something that happened with, you know, I think that the law, the basic law of Israel as a Jewish nation state, I think that is a very problematic law. And I think that it does carry out with it some questions about how you can be Jewish and democratic. I think that this law toppled the balance that we were trying to create in the state of Israel of being a democracy and a Jewish state at the same time. And I think that this in 2018 legislation, being it a basic law, it has toppled this very, very fragile balance that we were trying to create, and we were trying in this last Knesset, we tried to erase it, to annul this legislation, and I have to say regretfully that we didn't have many members of Knesset, even from the same our government, that were in favor. They were all in favor of presenting a new clause, and the equality clause inside this law, or making a new basic law of equality, which is very important. But they were not in favor of erasing the whole basic law. And this is one of the differences between Meretz and the other parties that are now represented in the Knesset.
Yes. So one more. What are the plans to reach out to the Mizrahim who have been marginalized both culturally and economically, and how can they be embraced?
Look, first of all, that's something that we talk about every election. Meretz is a party that, a very strange party, let's say. It's more like an American party than an Israeli one. In what sense? In the sense that we are not working only for a specific electorate, only for those that vote for us. For example, the religious work only for the needs of the religious people, or there are parties that are working for the bourgeois, or for the settlers. Meretz, actually, we work for the needs of Israeli citizens. And I can say that one of the important things that I was doing in this election, in this Knesset, was working for affordable housing. And there is, because the Mizrahi are, their economic status is weaker than others in the state, then a lot of the work that I was doing actually was for this community. And the affordable housing bills were passed in the past by Meretz members, but it doesn't give us back the voting. Okay, the voting. So I think that we have been working for the Mizrahi community, but I think that we have to be more open and more with a much more reaching out to these communities, and have and and see what I also can say that there are these communities, the Mizrahi communities, if we talk about, you know, in general, because I'm generalizing, I don't like it, and it's not true, because there are Mizrahis that vote for Meretz and vote for the left, but, you know, but yes. We do have to say, generally speaking, that they're more Mesorati. You know, they're less liberal. They're a little more religious, and they're more prone to the right wing, also economically speaking. So these are things that we need to have an open dialogue between communities. And it's not only a matter of representation, because they say you don't have Mizrahi represented in Meretz, but actually we do. Number two in Meretz today, Mossi Raz, he's of Mizrahi descent.
You talked about talking more in a symposium format. We've actually had some of these discussions in our symposium, and we look forward to doing more of that. And I see that the time is coming to an end, and we have lots of questions. I'm sorry I didn't get to all of them, but I really want to thank you, Gabby. You told me you just arrived from Mexico, so I appreciate you, jet lagged and all, coming on and answering so thoroughly our questions. And I hope you know that we greatly appreciate your time, and we want to be more engaged in conversations with you and others in the Meretz Party. And we are here for you in any and every way we can to support the work that you will do outside of the Knesset now. And I think that's very important, that we find ways to amplify that voice and your idea of still being in the Knesset without being in the Knesset, I think is smart, to show up there and speak out in what ways you can. So we encourage that, and let us know how we can support you in the future. Thanks to our executive director, Dinesh, and to Ron for all the work in making this discussion happen today. And thanks to everyone who joined us from all over the world. We hope that you have learned and enjoyed this webinar, and will share what you've learned with others and share Partners for Progressive Israel. And in case you missed what I mentioned in the beginning, Partners is in the midst of our Digital Israel Symposium, where next Sunday, this coming Sunday, we will focus on religion and human rights, and that some of which we were talking about earlier with Gabby will be part of those two sessions this coming Sunday. You can check out our website for more information and to register. Last but not least, while today's program has been free, generous contributions are what enable the organization to deliver events at no cost. So please visit our website, progressiveisrael.org. Check out our upcoming program, and if you can, make a donation. Thank you, Gabby, for always being there for us, always saying yes to us, and for being with us here today.
Thank you very much. And just one word, I have to say it strong enough. This government is going to be very problematic, and we will be fearing it for the things that they can do in Israel. But please don't stop talking against occupation and the fact that this occupation is becoming apartheid, and we cannot stop. And even don't touch the issue. There are a lot of problems that are going to be inside, but it has to come from us that we cannot allow Israel to be an occupying state. And thank you so much for inviting me, and for being with us all the time and being our partners. And we will continue working together.
Thank you. We look forward to hearing how the meeting goes next week. And I'll drop a note to Zahava. I hope she feels better. I know this has been hard on her. as well. Take care of yourself and be well. Thank you, everyone.